is Ann Weller from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be sharing nutrition information with you. This information is selected from the Nutrition Action Health Letter, a publication of the Center for Science in the Public Interest, based in Washington, D.C. The Center for Science in the Public Interest was founded in 1971 by three scientists who wanted to apply their academic training to the solving of social problems. It conducts innovative research and programs in health and nutrition and provides consumers with current information about their health and well-being. An independent, nonprofit consumer health group, the center promotes honest food labeling and advertising, safer and more nutritious foods, and pro-health alcohol policies. The center's work is supported by Nutrition Action Health Letter subscribers and by foundation grants. However, it accepts no government or industry funding. And Nutrition Action Health Letter, which was first published in 1974, accepts no advertising. The following edition of Nutrition News is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. Please use the information presented in this broadcast in consultation with your personal physician. Today's broadcast focuses on the cover story of the March 2010 issue of Nutrition Action Health Letter. Our food is generally safe to eat, says food safety expert Mansoor Samadpour, a former University of Washington microbiologist who runs a private food analysis lab in the Seattle area. But there is an element of Russian roulette to it. Which foods are most likely to make you sick? Well, there is no one culprit. Major outbreaks of E. coli, salmonella, and other bugs have been caused by produce grown in the United States and abroad, by fresh and processed meat, and by plant and animal foods produced by small companies, as well as by giant multinational companies. So here's what the latest outbreaks reveal about weaknesses in the food chain and what you can do to protect yourself. The March 2010 issue of Nutrition Action Health Letter, the cover story of the March 2000 issue of Nutrition Action Health Letter, is a report entitled Caution, Playing Russian Roulette with Your Food. This report is authored by David Chart, senior nutritionist for Nutrition Action Health Letter. In August of 2006, Bonita Ferris of Albuquerque, New Mexico, made herself a fresh spinach salad. The spinach said, "Ready to eat, triple washed, but I washed it anyway," she remembered. "I thought I was eating something good for me." Over the next several days, the 51-year-old single mother, who worked three jobs to support herself and her 9-year-old daughter, developed bloody diarrhea so severe that she began to drift in and out of consciousness. A friend rushed her to a hospital emergency room. Several days later, physicians diagnosed what was wrong: a severe infection of E. coli 0157H7, a bacterium that is found in the intestinal tract and excrement of animals. Ferris survived, but not before suffering permanent damage to her kidneys. The spinach that felled Bonita Ferris was picked in a field 1,000 miles away in San Benito County, California, a few weeks before she ate her salad. A government investigation could not pinpoint exactly how the spinach became contaminated with E. coli 157H7. Maybe wild pigs broke through a wire fence to reach the plants and left manure behind on some leaves. Or maybe rainwater drained from a nearby cattle pasture and splashed cow manure on the plants. But no matter how it happened, the contamination mushroomed when the tainted spinach was mixed with spinach from other farms at a processing plant. What started out as a limited number of contaminated plants from one small farm multiplied. According to plant records, 41,760 bags of spinach were packed that day for the U.S. market, and 720 bags were shipped to stores in Canada. 3 weeks later, Wisconsin health officials alerted the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention that four people had been diagnosed with hemolytic uremic syndrome, the serious kidney disease which is caused by E. coli O157H7. Within a week, after Oregon, New Mexico, and 17 other states reported new cases of E. coli infections, the Food and Drug Administration and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention advised consumers not to eat fresh spinach and spinach-containing foods. And by the end of the outbreak, 205 people in 26 states and Canada had become ill. 103 were hospitalized. 31 developed hemolytic uremic syndrome, and 3 died. Sales of spinach and leafy greens plummeted, costing California producers and processors $100 million. So what can we consumers do to protect ourselves? Thoroughly wash all produce before you eat it, even though that is no guarantee that it will end up bug-free. Your best protection, though, is a more vigilant industry, and that is just what the spinach outbreak may have produced. Unfortunately, it often takes an outbreak to motivate the industry to change, notes University of Minnesota food safety expert Jeff Bender. California growers had a significant one that hurt them economically, so they had to come up with how they were going to deal with that in the future. Their solution? Produce handlers and shippers formed the California Leafy Green Products Handler Marketing Agreement. We put a system in place that would verify through mandatory government inspections that farmers and shippers were following good food safety practices, says Leafy Green Products Handler Marketing Agreement Executive Director Scott Horsfall. USDA-trained auditors who work for the California Department of Food and Agriculture now inspect each Leafy Green Products Handler Marketing Agreement members' farms and processing facilities at least twice a year. And at least one of those visits is unannounced. Among the rules is this one, that wild animals should not have access to fields where crops are growing and water should not drain from animal pastures into those fields. Now, the industry pays for the audits with a self-imposed tax of $15 to $20 an acre, which actually works out to pennies per carton, says Horsfall. Those who don't fix even small problems risk being decertified by the program, which will have a huge impact on their business, he adds. I think it's safe to say that if you want a ticket to this dance, it starts with Leafy Green Products Handler Marketing Agreement Certification. So, virtually everyone in the California industry is a member. Most distributors insist that their suppliers be certified, notes Horsfall, who adds that Canada and Mexico will import California leafy greens only if they have been certified. Between California and Arizona, which has a similar program, roughly 90% of U.S.-grown lettuce, spinach, kale, cabbage, chard, arugula, endive, escarole, and spring mix is now covered. So if you're buying a packaged salad or a whole head of lettuce or a bunch of spinach, you can now be pretty confident that they have been certified to have been grown under good agricultural practices, says Horsfall. How's the program working? Since the Leafy Green Products Handler Marketing Agreement went into effect in the summer of 2007, several small E. coli outbreaks have been traced back to California greens, including one to romaine lettuce from the Salinas Valley that sickened at least 10 people, and one to produce from farms in Santa Barbara that sickened at least 46 people. But there have been no large outbreaks like the one in 2006 that came from eating contaminated spinach, and no reported deaths. In February of 2007, as battered California growers were trying to figure out how to protect their leafy greens from E. coli and other bugs, the first case of a new foodborne outbreak caused by a rare strain of salmonella surfaced. But it would take 8 months and 139 victims in 30 states before epidemiologists realized that the cases were linked to a single kind of food. Salmonella is normally found in the intestines of animals. The strain responsible for this outbreak had the user-unfriendly name 4512I-. Throughout the spring and summer of 2007, local health departments continued to record 3 to 4 cases of the infection every week, but they could not figure out where it was coming from. In August, it struck Amy Reinert's 19-month-old daughter, Isabel, in Minnesota. The child suddenly became violently ill with unrelenting diarrhea and a temperature that hit 104 degrees Fahrenheit. After Isabel suffered a seizure and lost consciousness, Reinert rushed her to the hospital, where the infant was given IV fluids and antibiotics. Doctors sent her home, but the diarrhea persisted for nearly 6 weeks. Isabel had salmonella, said the doctors, but they did not know how she had gotten it. In September, the number of reported cases spiked to as many as 12 a day, and by early October, Minnesota state epidemiologists had gathered enough information to finger the culprit: banquet turkey pot pies. The pies were manufactured by the food giant ConAgra at a plant in Missouri. At first, the company balked at a recall. It blamed its customers. The company believes the issue is likely related to consumer undercooking of the product, ConAgra declared in a press release. Doug Powell, a food safety expert at Kansas State University, says that is a weak excuse. These are 50-cent pot pies that kids coming home from school toss in the microwave. They should have fully cooked ingredients, so that kids or anyone else cannot screw it up. But the directions on the banquet package were confusing. For example, the front panel said, ready in 4 minutes, which suggested that the pie simply needed to be reheated. They really required thorough cooking. And there were 3 different cooking times, depending on the microwave's wattage. Yet even following the directions carefully did not necessarily result in fully cooked pies, as Powell demonstrated on his website, barfblog.com. That's BARFBLOG.com. After microwaving a pie for 6 minutes, the maximum time specified in the directions, and then letting it stand for 3 minutes, as directed, Powell reported that the interior of the pot pie reached 148 degrees Fahrenheit, while the recommended safe endpoint temperature for poultry is 165 degrees Fahrenheit. Amy Reinert said that she cooked the pot pie for her daughter even longer than the directions called for, 7 minutes in the microwave, then 10 minutes in a conventional oven to make the crust crispy. Yet Isabel still got sick. Under pressure from health authorities in Oregon and Minnesota and angry consumers, ConAgra eventually relented and issued a recall of 3.4 million pot pies. Both the Banquet brand and all the private label pies the company manufactured for stores like Kroger and Albertsons. By the time the outbreak petered out in December of 2007, 401 salmonella cases in 41 states had been confirmed. Half of the victims suffered bloody diarrhea, and a third of them had to be hospitalized. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention estimates that for every reported case of foodborne illness, 38 additional cases go unrecognized or unreported. So it is likely that more than 15,000 people got sick after eating banquet pot pies. Now, which of the more than 25 ingredients in the banquet pot pies was responsible for the salmonella? And how did they become contaminated? U.S. Department of Agriculture and ConAgra inspectors were never able to identify the culprit. Like many companies, ConAgra did not test ingredients for dangerous bacteria. It does now, at least for its pot pies. So what can we do? Number one, always follow cooking instructions. But even that does not guarantee you'll be safe. Consumers need to understand that although some convenience food products look like they are already cooked, they may not be, says the University of Minnesota's Jeff Bender. ConAgra has replaced the ready in 4 minutes claim on its label with a warning that says must be cooked thoroughly. The label also tells consumers to cook only one pie at a time, and it recommends using a conventional oven. The microwave instructions say to cook on high only in an oven rated at 1100 watts or more, and to insert a meat thermometer into several parts of the cooked pie to make sure the internal temperature reaches 165 degrees Fahrenheit. Now, a microwave oven's wattage is typically printed inside the door or on the back. And the American Frozen Food Institute publishes information about wattages of popular ovens at microwaveovenfacts.com. How you handle food matters. With enough warmth, moisture, and nutrients, one bacterium that divides every half hour can produce 17 million progeny in 12 hours. Putting food in the refrigerator or freezer stops most but not all bacteria from growing. So, rules for leftovers. Refrigerate or freeze leftovers within 2 hours of cooking. Otherwise, throw them away. Store food at a shallow depth, about 2 inches. That speeds the chilling. And use leftovers from the refrigerator within 4 days. An exception is that you can use stuffing and gravy within 2 days. Reheat solid leftovers to 165 degrees Fahrenheit and reheat liquid leftovers to a rolling boil and toss what you don't finish. Buy fresh cut produce, like half a watermelon or bagged salad greens, only if it's refrigerated or surrounded by ice. Separate raw meat, poultry, and seafood from other foods in your shopping cart and in your refrigerator. Store perishable fresh fruits and vegetables, like strawberries, lettuce, herbs, and mushrooms, or cut or peeled produce. Store them in a clean refrigerator at a temperature of 40 degrees Fahrenheit or below. Wash your hands for 20 seconds with warm water and soap before and after preparing any food. Wash fruits and vegetables under running water just before eating, cutting, or cooking, even if you plan to peel them. Do not use soap. It leaves a residue. Produce washes are okay, but not necessary. Scrub firm produce, like melons and cucumbers, with a clean produce brush, and let them air dry before cutting. Discard the outer leaves of heads of leafy vegetables like cabbage and lettuce. Do not eat sprouts unless they are thoroughly cooked. Children, the elderly, pregnant women, and anyone with a weakened immune system should avoid raw sprouts. Cooking any food to 160 degrees Fahrenheit will kill any E. coli O157H7. Drink only pasteurized milk, juice, or cider. In August of 2007, while the Banquet plant was manufacturing salmonella-laden frozen pot pies in Missouri, a Cargill food plant in Wisconsin was turning out frozen ground beef patties contaminated with E. coli O157H7. Some of the meat was labeled American Chef's Selection Angus Beef Patties and was sold at Sam's Club, which is owned by Walmart. Sharon Smith, a manager of a Dairy Queen about 75 miles northwest of Minneapolis, bought a box and grilled some patties at a Sunday family barbecue. Her 20-year-old daughter, Stephanie, a children's dance instructor, ate one. Days later, Stephanie suffered bloody diarrhea, kidney failure, and seizures and convulsions, so severe that doctors at the Mayo Clinic were forced to put her into a coma. She regained consciousness 9 weeks later, nerve damaged and paralyzed. And doctors say that it is unlikely that she will ever walk again. Eventually, 940 people fell sick with E. coli infections linked to meat from the Cargill plant, and the company recalled 845,000 pounds of its ground beef. So what went wrong in this case? Beef is ground using meat not from one cow, but from various sources, explains Jeff Bender. The meat processor is going to use whatever he can buy and mix it all together, and it will all basically look the same in the end. ABC's Good Morning America recently commissioned an independent lab to analyze the DNA from 6 ground beef packages purchased from major supermarket chains in and around Seattle, Washington. Each package consisted of the meat from at least 4 different cows, and sometimes from as many as 8 cows, says microbiologist Mansoor Samapur, whose laboratories did the analysis. Cargill's contaminated patties were made by grinding beef trimmings from at least 3 sources: the Giant Slaughterhouse Greater Omaha Packing, a facility in Texas that slaughters older dairy cows and bulls, and a slaughterhouse in Uruguay, where USDA inspectors later found improper testing for E. coli. The trimmings were combined with a meat mash made by a South Dakota plant, and the facility warms fatty meat scraps, centrifuges away much of the fat, and treats what's left with ammonia to kill E. coli, according to the New York Times investigation last fall. The U.S. Department of Agriculture does not require companies to test their foods or the raw materials that go into them for E. coli O157H7. And Cargill, like many other meat processors, did not test the trimmings or the mash before mixing them together. That explains why the company and the USDA never figured out how the E. coli got into the frozen patties. In the weeks leading up to the outbreak, USDA inspectors did find unsanitary conditions in the Cargill plant, according to the New York Times. They reported seeing large numbers of patties on the floor, grinders encrusted with old bits of meat, and a worker who routinely dumped inedible meat on the floor close to a production line. But the USDA did not penalize the company, and the plant did not correct the violations until after the outbreak. So what can you do? With ground beef, you should just assume that E. coli can be there. So it's important to thoroughly cook the product and avoid cross-contamination in the kitchen, says Bender. The bug is just insidious, and there are a number of ways it can get into and contaminate food. The only sure way to tell whether meat is cooked enough is to use a meat thermometer. But less than 1% of Americans use one on hamburgers or chicken, notes Kansas State's Doug Powell. Everyone uses the color of the meat, and that is a terrible indicator of temperature. Well, we've reached the conclusion of this month's segment of Nutrition News. Please join me at the same time next month. I hope that you've enjoyed the show. I'm Ann Weller, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. This program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. It is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. So long until next time.